How would your life be if you only own three things of each kind that you need? Only three. I once heard about the story of a nun who only kept a maximum of three things of each kind of things she needed. Three sets of outfits, three sets of sheets, three books, three pens, three rolls of toilet paper, important things, three treasured mementos, etc. You get the point. When other people learned that about her, some would pity her lifestyle of simplicity and said things like, "Oh, poor you. You do that because you make a vow of poverty. I can never do that." Then she would seize the opportunities to share the joy of having only three things of a kind, a lifestyle she had developed voluntarily by choice over time, not something that was imposed on her. She said, "I don't feel weighed down by things I have. I don't have to find places to store them, for one. I find a great sense of freedom and mobility when I am needed somewhere else. Most importantly, having three things of a kind doesn't mean that I cannot have new things I desire. I just need to let go of something before welcoming something new." Ta-da! I wonder how you feel about that on a Sunday when the gospel, the good news according to Jesus Christ, takes us down the road reflecting on greed, possessions, abundance, and richness. Just have a show of hand. How many of you have heard about the sayings, "Our possessions possess us"? I see a few hands there. In similar words, Jesus warned the certain someone from the crowd who wanted him to be his executor to divide inheritance with his brother, not just him, but as well as his followers. One's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions, Jesus said. Chet Myers, my go-to theologian, which this sermon leans heavily on, noted that the Greek word for possessions, hupachoton, is closer to the English word belongings. So belonging was being translated into possessions. So he suggests a closer translation of Jesus' warning was more like, "Do not belong to your belongings. Do not belong to your belongings." Personal story. My parents wrapped up their lives in Hong Kong and moved to Canada for good about 9 years ago. And they packed up their 70-somewhat years of life and took with them, moved with them, 300 boxes. They may have opened half of that, and all those remaining unopened boxes are still in the garage. And I have suspicions that that may not be just an example of my parents. Beloved, you belong to the Creator who loved you into existence by an everlasting love. And in a reciprocal way, the Creator belongs to you like a loving parent belongs to the child. If you are in doubt, take heart the verses from the Hebrew Scriptures readings from Hosea that Annette read to us earlier. When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. I led him with cords of human kindness, with bands of love. I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheeks. I bent down to them and fed them. Beautiful image of our belongingness in God and God's belongingness in us. When we pledge our sense of belonging to our belongings, the vicious cycle of greed begins. Mind you, greed is not the sentimental feeling of just desiring more of what we like, nor simply a moral category in the Bible. The Greek word used for greed, taxnixias, I'm not a great Greek scholar, refers to an insatiable desire to have what rightfully belongs to others. This is what we are talking about, an insatiable desire to have what rightfully belongs to others. Think of the time when you told your child that the toy they tried to grab was not theirs. It belongs to their friend. Now, take a big leap. Think about North America's history of colonizations and dispossessions of indigenous people and lands and resources. Think about the extractive industry that fueled our economies for way too long with an insatiable desire to have what rightfully belongs to the land. This is when rubbers hit the road. This so-called parable of the rich fool is not just a polite invitation to live a simpler life. Sorry, no offense to the sister who owned three things of each kind. The edge of the gospel story sinks much deeper as an in-your-face smack or critique of how our relationship to with possessions and a critique of our economy. Chet Myers noted that Jesus was aware that inheritance laws were often used by the wealthy to pass on their class privilege from generations to generations, as we still do today. He uses this request as an opportunity to address the deeper issue of wealth accumulation just for the sake of accumulating. Jesus' parables begins with the land of a rich man produced abundantly. If I am teaching grammar, the subject is the land produced abundantly. Instead of crediting the abundance to the land which produces it, and as a providential grace from the Creator, the rich man counted his good fortunes as his own merit, and thus he deserved every single bit of it. The late Walter Brueggemann, in his article Providential Tyranny, reflecting on the divine providence and meritocracy, said, "The rich man failed to recognize the abundance is a communal asset, not a private possession. He failed to consider what it costs to be rich in things and poor in soul. He thought he merited all that he had, but his wealth was misdirected. Not towards God and God's creation. Not towards his creator who gives them their food in due season, and not towards neighbors who require food and drink. He misconstrued his place in the providence of God, and so he has deformed God's providence into merit. End quote. Friends, the problem with the meritocracy way of seeing things is that it creates two dualistic classes of the deserved and the undeserved. Wealth and power are not only signs of grace, but they are deserved and earned now. And we have seen this time after time when meritocracy is applied in a broad stroke in social analysis. It breeds violence towards those society sees as undeserved and dehumanizes them simply because of their socioeconomic status and without regard to where they come from, what class they come from, or what opportunities they had growing up and accessibility to opportunities. Looking back, growing up, I see myself as someone who have always worked pretty hard for the things I try to achieve. But having said that, I have never lost sight of the fact that all the blessings I received in life was not simply just earned by me. I remember, for example, I saved up maybe 1/3 of the money to go to seminary and thinking that, okay, I can take on student loans. I do not have any debt. I was very fortunate. Don't have any prior debt, but I ended up completing seminary debt-free purely because of the generosity of people I would not ever have expected. And I am sharing this as someone who grew up with considerable social and economic privilege. This takes us back to how Jesus and the post-Pentecostal community of faith look at possessions. Chad Myers pointed out that the Greek words for possessions was used by Luke as things that are redistributed to the poor, which is a major theme of Luke to share our assets to build community instead of cannibalizing community to accumulate wealth. The same word possessions is being used in the story of Zacchaeus, the tax collectors, who after encountering Jesus ended up sharing his possessions with all the people he has taken advantages of. And the same word also used in the second chapter of Acts of the early post-Pentecostal communities share their wealth with one another so that all may have a chance to live. So what are we talking about here? I'm talking about the S word in church. What is the S word in church? Stewardship. Stewarding the time, talent, and possessions, financial resources we have as follower of Jesus. And the first lessons of stewardship begins with taking stock of the blessings of God in our own lives. It is not supposed to be or to be interpreted as an obligation to give, because to be able to offer freely, it needs to tie into our thanks of overflowing thanksgiving that flows out. But this is also a way for us to participate in the Sabbath economy, not the economy of capitalisms that we grew up with. The Sabbath economy portrayed in scriptures, that there is always enough if we share. That is part of the reasons why we are introducing the regathering tree. The place God calls us is the place where our deep gladness and the world's deep hungers meet. May this be so. Amen.